Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 675, Personality versus AI. We've got some jokes for your classroom. We've got some wonderful resources for your classroom as well. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I am doing all right. It's a little cool today, so we need the rain, though, so it looks like it might rain a little bit. So, I did have a college student helping me edge the garden beds. He's using a Half Moon Edge lawn edger, you know, those old-fashioned,
sure.
Boop.
Yeah.
They'd only used power edgers in the past, and I commented them that the specific area they were looking at, we're working on, looked very good. Hmm. They replied, "It took some practice, but I finally found my groove." My groove?
Okay. Yep, I gotcha. Yeah.
My wife gave me an envelope, but said not to be opened until 2027 on it. Yeah, inside was a list of reasons I cannot be trusted to follow simple directions.
Yep. That's a good one.
Ooh, I'm taking a new job in sales for a global prosthetics company.
You are?
Yeah, that way I can tell everyone that I'm an international arms dealer.
Sure. Yep. Right in Philippus. That's the right company.
I don't understand why people are so secretive when I asked, what's the lowest rank in the army? That'd be a private. That'd be private.
Yeah, you're asking private questions there.
Let's see here. You know the song Born to Be Wild, right?
I have heard of it, yes.
Yes. Do you know what the scariest part of it is?
I do not.
When they find a head out on the highway.
Oh, I got you. Yes.
That
makes it a gangster song, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, last year I joined a support group for antisocial people.
You did?
Yeah, we haven't met yet.
Oh, I got you. There's a theme there. Yep.
What do you call a zombie who doesn't joke around?
Oh, a zombie who doesn't joke around. The Walking Dead guys? I don't know.
Dead serious. We have a couple of visual jokes over for you at middleschoolmatters.com. One of which, I don't know, Sean, I'm not sure you're a Rush fan, but do you know who Geddy Lee is?
I do not. You're delving, you're outside of my musical talent zone.
That's true. Geddy Lee is the lead singer of Rush.
Okay.
So that would be important information for one of the jokes.
Okay.
Let's see here. Let's head over to learn a little bit about Lady Edison. Do you know Lady Edison?
I'm hoping that is Thomas's wife.
Well, I'll tell you what, not quite, but let's head over, let's let the wonderful Dave Podlowski enlighten us on this one.
Cool.
I'm just going to throw in a few jokes here, but I'm going to skip those. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Podlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the July-August 2025 issue of The Science Teacher, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section, Right to Source, written by Jessica Fries Gaither. And she wrote an article entitled, Exploring Everyday Inventions with Lady Edison. And she said that when your students think of an inventor, who do they picture? What kinds of products do inventors conceive of and create? Students may think of Thomas Edison or technologically sophisticated devices. But the truth is that every item we use and interact with was invented by someone. And that someone might not resemble the stereotypical image of an inventor. Beulah Louise Henry, born in 1887 and died in 1973, was a self-taught inventor, earning 49 patents and creating over 100 inventions over a 50-year period, including a vacuum ice cream freezer, a bobbinless sewing machine, and an umbrella with color-coordinated snap-on covers. She noticed when everyday items did not work as desired or could be improved upon, and then she pictured a solution, drawing sketches and creating models to communicate her ideas. Undeterred by her lack of a technical or scientific background, she was creative in her methods. When she wondered why a woman couldn't match her umbrella's color to her clothes, she ripped apart an old umbrella and punched holes in the fabric with a nail to create the prototype for a new one. Her inspiration for the vacuum ice cream freezer came from seeing a thermos bottle. She invented the bobbinless sewing machine overnight after admiring the chain link decoration around a theater's marquee, so prolific that she was dubbed Lady Edison. Her story is one of inspiration and persistence. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
Okay, so, you know, we can, I was going to do the sew this one up or, you know, protect us from the rain, but I won't.
Yeah.
So we're both back to school now.
Yeah, we are.
We had our first week of kids, of all of the kids in the building. And usually for us, like the first week is frequently kind of putting out fires kind of thing.
Yep.
And because, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you know it.
Right.
And things went really well. Things went really smooth. You know, there's just in technology, there's always lots of things that like people forget to tell you about. You're like, oh, and you have to scramble and get those things fixed up, or there can be updates that have occurred over the summer that you just didn't know about, or from different applications and things. But it went really smooth for us, so that was good. So we had lots of kids back in the building, and you know, it used to be I cracked up over the sixth graders because you'd get some of them that were 6 feet tall and some of them that were 4 feet tall. And
yeah.
So now I'm in the building with fifth graders and some of them are just about 6 feet tall and some of them are the kid that I saw carrying the Stanley water bottle, which looked like it was half her size kind of thing. So been fun. And then we did do a review. We had one of the kids used the speak selection on the iPads last year.
Oh.
Which, if you're not familiar with it, is like an awesome accessibility feature that's built into the iPads and the Macs, where if a kid has some reading difficulties, they can easily just select text and say, hey, just speak this to me. And they have control over it. no extra application, no extra, nothing different. They're just using what everybody else in the classroom is using. And so we had a kid who went from sixth grade to seventh grade, and that is iPad to Mac. So he came in and, you know, I said, you know, well, click here, turn it on. It's going to work just like you did last year, except, you know, this year you're going to have to double click or two finger click or use the I can't remember if it's the command or control key now. hang on. Because I usually right-click on it, right? So, and I don't think I have it turned on this computer, so.
I think it's control-click.
No. So, yeah, and it might be. So we set them up with that and got him to practice that a couple times and then set them up with Dictate as well. So he can, so any field that takes text, he can, you know, just double click the function key. We said, how about the function key? Because you're not going to use that, I'm likely to use that. So he double taps the function key, and then he can just speak what he wants to into the computer, and he'll be all set. So, so that's really cool because, again, it's. I like it a lot because there's nothing calling him out as, you know, needing anything. Just like, that's just the way he prefers to do it. So it's pretty cool. So.
There's a lot of really cool accessibility software out there for iPads.
Yeah.
Especially SLPs have some really cool help software out there. I know that one of the SLPs in my school district has spent the past couple of days setting up conversation boards or talkie boards for the autistic kids. And she's looking at using AI to generate Studio Ghibli people. Mm-hmm. So when these kids are in class, one of the pages for the boards will be the Studio Ghibli representations of people in that student's class. So instead of saying student, 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 they can actually hit the icon and, you know, Susie, Abdul, you know, Bobby, you know, whatever. And they can start talking about specific students, but then also communicating with specific students.
Right.
And try to work them off the boards and then into a real world conversation, audio conversation.
So you used a TLA, and I'm going to ask you to, which of course stands for three-letter acronym. So you used a TLA of SLP, and I'm going to ask you to just broaden that out for the audience there.
And for those of you playing at home, we didn't use a TLA last week like we promised, so I got one in this week. Mm-hmm. TLA is a three-letter acronym, and SLP stands for Speech Language Pathologist.
Correct. Yep.
Yep. So cool.
And yeah. Apple has tons of accessibility things built in. And I think one of the things that we're going to try to kind of do is normalize the use of some of those accessibility features, even if you don't need them, just because number one, it can just help some kids who may not be identified, but then it just builds a culture of, you know, you're not different. You're just doing this thing. So, you know,
yeah,
do the thing. So, yeah.
Very cool.
So we did that with a couple of different kids. One I did remotely and one I did, the kid came down. So it's always nice to be able to talk to the kids and go, okay, here you go. And then have them do the clicking so that we make sure that they know how to do it. They know how to turn it on, mm-hmm. how to turn it off, and how to process that. So, because again, I just think that for a lot of kids, for whether they're identified or not, if they know how to do this, it can just help them out and make things easier and just continue to make them part of the, you know, not separate them out, not make them feel different, not call attention to additional needs they have. And then you've got a lot of kids that can benefit with it, even if they haven't been identified by group. Or sometimes just, you know, what time it is. Like, are your eyes tired? Just have it read it to you. Or sometimes if you have it read it to you, you're processing it a little bit different and you can get more out of it that way. So, mm-hmm. And it's all built in. So it's like right there. It's not an extra program that has to be downloaded and installed or anything like that. So Apple does a nice job with us, a lot of the accessibility things. So it's a good thing. All right. You have, what do you call those who are employed who are not teacher certified but help students in specific situations usually?
Productive citizens of the world.
Productive citizens of the world. Yes. Because we had the terminology of a paraprofessional back in the day.
I got you now. Yeah.
In Maine, they're called ed techs. We have ed techs one, two, and three. Educational technicians or ed techs.
So you have three levels of them.
What makes you say that? Yes, we have three
or, levels of them. Or they get specific names in the computer. Your ed tech, like back when I was first hired, I was teacher A for a year, right? And the other person that was hired was teacher B, right?
On the schedules.
Yeah. Teacher A. Yes, I am. Come in my classroom. And maybe you've got ed tech one, ed tech two, ed tech. I don't know. I just work these things out, right? No, that's interesting. No, I think it's just a district thing. We call them aides. I think parapros are the ones who follow a student in our district. Yeah. And I think that's the distinction we make. You know, we get some nice ones. We're mm-hmm. thankful for the ones we have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They are an important piece of the educational puzzle. And there was a time, it's been quite a while now, where we were asked to really cut back on parapros. Because there was a push to have, there was, like anything, there's things that are used correctly and things that are used incorrectly. And I think the perception was that we were, and this was in general, this wasn't like the district I was working in at the time, it's like across education in general, were using parapros to replace teachers instead of to enhance teachers. And so there was a push to limit the number of parapros. It was probably also one of those budget times where there was like, we got to cut money. Where do we cut money? So, you know,
yep, that's always entirely tough. Possible.
But parapros, teacher aides, whatever you want to call them, can be very, very valuable, can really make a difference in the lives of kids and in the lives of, and then in this, the culture of the school as well. They're just super valuable. So, oh yeah. And you have one that you had last year, but didn't have at the beginning of last year, correct?
So it's true. Yeah.
This year,
and she's wonderful.
So this year she gets to see what the beginning of the school year is like and be part of that.
That's true. She does. I think you're angling for me to tell that funny story. Am I right?
I'm angling.
Okay. All right. Just making sure. So, whereas I have like two bachelors, the equivalent of a third and a master's degree, I don't have anything beyond that. But I get the biggest kick out of some of these. I should preface this. We went through four paraprofessionals, four aides last year, because the ESL department would lose an aide and they would steal ours to replace. So it wasn't like we drove them off. They kept getting poached. So they had to find a new one. But this one we're keeping, but it's only the second week of school. She might get poached again because she's really good. But I did get a kick out of the fact this is the first time that, you know, this year she's seen me start the year. And I did the Play-Doh, Cardinal 101 Play-Doh activity with them. We've talked about mm-hmm. before, where the kids realized it's creativity takes time. And if they don't allow themselves time to work on an assignment, they're actually not giving their best. They're giving their first and really not really good enough idea on any assignment or any project that they do. And it really took. The kids understood and they're like, oh, I see it. Now, will they do it? Absolutely not. They're seventh grade. But I can say, do you remember back when we talked about? So I can do that now. But I did get a kick out of the fact that I was explaining something. And off in the corner, I see her talking to a student and she wants them to be quiet and listen to what I'm talking about. And I hear her say, and I've never once ever said anything about my education and what level I'm at or anything. But I hear her say, shh, listen to Dr. McGurr. it's not true. I do not have a terminal degree. Sometimes things feel terminal, but I don't have a terminal degree. But I got the biggest kick out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the other thing that's cool, or another thing that's cool, is the social web.
And we're going to start with something that I thought was really cool. Alyssa Braddy is a consultant. She lives on the East Coast, but she flies out and travels around the country consulting with schools. And she posted something. This is something that was bothering me like crazy last year, but I could never like put it in the words or articulate it just right to really communicate how I felt about this. And this nails it. Classroom observation without feedback is surveillance. It's like, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's exactly how I felt. Because I had somebody, a curriculum director came to my room, sat down, wrote a lot of stuff and walked out. And never once did I ever get any feedback as to like, are we okay? Are we good? Mm-hmm. Is there something that you want me, you know, what should I know here? Nothing. I got nothing back.
And I got nothing.
Yeah. Just got nothing. So, that's my favorite quote from this past week is, classroom observation without feedback is surveillance. Yeah. I must've been okay because, instructional coaches were told to go and observe my room because they had to go observe so many rooms at the beginning of the year. And I had two coaches walk in together at the same time to observe my classroom. And I said, two of you at once? They go, we were told to come. I said, because they said, not a bad thing. They said, we've been told by others, come see Sean's room. You see some stuff. It'll be good. I said, okay. But I harassed them enough about just doing these drive-by observations that they did. They started sending just a little note back saying, hey, this is what we saw. And thanks for letting us come in your room and whatever. And it's like, that's what should be done. That's the right thing. I sent them notes saying, hey, thanks for coming in and observing my class. And, you know, if there's anything we want to talk about, come, you know, let me know. And I even sent it to the one fellow who came and observed and walked out, didn't give me any feedback. I gave him feedback. So, but I wish
feedback will happen.
Yeah. Well, and it's not negative feedback, right?
No, no.
I want to be able to have that type of relationship where we can talk about stuff. But if you just come in and walk out, that's, you know.
And that's part of, in Maine, we refer to it as PEPG, which is evaluation and growth and professional growth. And I really like that there's an emphasis on, hey, look, a lot of this is, it's about growth. It's about continuing to grow as a teacher. And that should be our emphasis. It's and I like that a lot. I think that's, it's hard as humans, right? Because you get stuck on the evaluation part. But it really should be about growth. And I know that, you know, the best teachers that I had were always growing and always doing some things different and learning. And we had rich discussions about, like, you know, when I came in and be like, well, because I used to give them short things. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of them we'd have follow-up conversations, you know, because honestly, as a principal, you're busy. You got a lot going on. So, but I did, I had a little packet of things and I would always write like a sentence or two that, you know, thank you for letting me come in your class. Well, that part was written. That part was pre-printed.
Pre-printed, yeah.
But then I would note that, you know, I really liked the way all of the kids were involved, you know, or, you know, I saw the engagement from the kids was outstanding or whatever it is that I saw. We had some great, great teachers. So that emphasis on growth is pretty cool. So I like that.
One of the things we have to do is meet with an instructional coach and do something with at least one thing. Veteran teachers meet do one thing with a veteran coach. Rookie teachers have to do two or three things with instructional coaches. So I went to the technology instructional coach because I've been working on that AI project with ISTE and things. Yeah, yeah. And I went to the instructional coach and I said, hey, let's you and I do one and we'll get it out of the way. He goes, great. What do you want to do? And so I started talking about AI. And he gave me that look in his eyes where I realized I'll be coaching him. And that's okay. That's all right. Because having that end of it, me doing that end of it is going to be good for me.
Right. But for me, I love that. I love that you have instructional coaches involved and that teachers are expected to work with the instructional coaches. Because I think that, again, focuses on growth and what growth can be. And that's a great culture to get into place. It's like, I keep talking to people and it's like for a lot of teachers, there's a reticence to be working with a coach, right? Like,
sure.
Because in the past, it frequently meant you weren't doing a very good job and blah, right. blah, blah.
Exactly.
And it's like, the people who are highest achieving and doing really great stuff, they have coaches. The easiest example is like in sports, right? No matter how good you are, you have a coach. Your coach who keeps working with you and working with you. It's like, and trying to get that enculturated is can be hard, but it can be really awesome to get into place where it's like, all right. Instructional coaches, you're expected to work with an instructional coach because there has to be an expectation that you work with instructional coaches. So, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Your, how should we put this? The podcast software that is your nemesis, Boss Jock Jr.
It's
is on sale.
Nemesis. Not my nemesis. You like it a lot. And that's awesome.
I do.
I don't use it. And that's okay.
That's true. Boss Jock has a free option, but you can also get Boss Jock Jr. The Boss Jock is gone. Boss Jock is now Backpack. But Boss Jock Jr., which is great for kids, is on sale for 50% off. If you, this Labor Day season, and but they have a free option, and for most kids, the free option is just fine. But I'd like to see my kids do some Boss Jock Jr. some more of it this year. Although I did find a couple other things I like, I'm going to try. I'll share that on another show when I kind of get going with that. Cause I want to run through it with them first to see if it's really, really good for middle school kids. Mm-hmm. But I know that Boss Jock Jr. is, but not every kid has an iOS device, and this is iOS only devices. So, right. But it's really powerful. It's so cool. And if you pair it with Suno, oh man, the things you could do, right? And I sent Troy a Suno recording today. So we're going to see if we can perk his ears up here. All right, John Arsawash. Or yes. Did you want to say more about Boss Jock?
No, I'm going to say more about this one, though.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll get you started. Here's a lead-in for this breaking Troy commentary. Here we go. John Arsawash. That's Jer Arsawash. A gem is a custom AI agent and is trained to perform a specific task. Gems are great for classroom teachers. You can use gems to develop custom lesson plans, rubrics, coloring pages, and more. I made my first gem last week. So, all right, but you can learn more at this link. You can learn even more from Troy.
Well, no, let's go. Gem is from Google, is part of the Google Gemini AI. Right.
Yes.
Right? Yep. And they have one that's included, Storybook.
Yes. But
I have actually created a gem.
Ooh.
That you can share? I stole 99% of it from Sean and McCurr.
Oh.
Probably. But so at least the concept. So after we had been chatting and talking and, you know, we did the podcast and you've shared some things with me, I created a Google Gem called Lesson Plans for 7th Grade Social Studies.
Okay.
Yes, that is a wonderfully unique name, right?
I think I've seen that name before.
So and what I did is I created a prompt that was like, you know, you're an excellent 7th grade social studies teacher. You want to take into consideration Jack Birkemeyer, Rick Warmly. You know, I did all of that. I also uploaded the main standards.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'd asked it to create, you know, lesson plans that follow that. That are interactive and blah, blah, blah. So now all I have to do is type in like First Amendment, go boom. And it gives me lesson plans that are aligned mm-hmm. with Jack Merkemeyer, Rick Warmly, references the main standards and away we go. So that is, and I've made a couple of other ones as well. But I use the 7th grade social studies for one of my examples this past week. So it is. It's really neat. And I don't quite know how to do this yet, but I think you can share Google Gems.
You can.
I have to look up the process of that. So
you can share them. I can't. Like, I made one for the social studies department, right?
Okay.
Covering 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And so I put the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade standards in there. Mm-hmm. Now, you can put 10 documents or items in the gem. You can't go past 10. So you can put 10 in there. So I filled 10 things. And I put in stuff from Rick Wormley. I put in stuff from Jack Birkemeyer, Judith Bainan, Katie Powell. Some of them are just articles on ideas, mm-hmm. right? On things that I want the social studies teachers to have as a resource, because I think we're going to focus on project-based learning as a solution to AI rote answering. So I created one. Now, I don't have the rights to share that gem with anybody else because it requires an admin level permission. But if I had admin level permission, I could take this gem, store it in my Google Drive, and then just share it out to whoever wanted that gem and wanted to use that gem. So I could share it. I could put it in my social studies department folder, and the sixth grade teachers could simply grab that gem, put it in their Gemini. Eighth grade teachers, the same thing. Or even actually what I would do is, because they're so disparate, this between sixth and eighth, I would take and actually make a gem for eighth and make a basic gem, and then make one for seventh, one for sixth, one for eighth, because there's some different documents that eighth is going to need that sixth grade is not going to need. And seventh grade is a whole other animal, and it needs its own thing too. So, but like there's certain foundation things, like curriculum things, like I found a bunch of PDFs, articles that Rick wrote, and I've got some really great stuff that Judith Bainan did on mid-level literacy. And I got some stuff that Katie Powell's written on making activities, quick and dirty activities that don't require any time. Right. And so I've got those things I want put in there so that when they go through and say, all right, build me a lesson plan, they're actually building it out of solid middle-level pedagogy. Because a lot of the rappers don't care about grade level pedagogy, right? They just care about delivering you a lesson. And a lot of teachers are really happy with that. And I got my lesson, I'm done. I can turn my objectives in, woo, and go on. Like I talked to a guy from Utah who said, yeah, I do 9 weeks of lesson plans at a time. And I was like, you don't actually follow them. There's no possible way you follow them because... Right. He's ticking a box. I get that. Right. But if I want ideas on good level pedagogy that I'm just not thinking about in the moment, because we all get tired as the year goes on.
Sure.
And you're not going to think of everything that you could think of. And the thing that I like best about this so far, I had a conversation with the English teacher this week, and she just kind of looked at me like, first of all, the fact that you thought of this or to put this in here is a little crazy. Second of all, of these five things that you give me as choices, I do like this one. Let's talk about this. But I really want to emphasize to her that these are just ideas, right? You don't have to do any of these, but I want to do something like this and have a conversation with you about this and do this with you. There's a lot of other people who knew I was doing this before she knew it. So I don't know if she'd heard from them or not that I was doing this. But that's the type of power, right? Because we can say, I know middle of a pedagogy, and I know these are the pieces my kids need. My kids last year or this year need a more specific focus on an area of middle level pedagogy that last year's didn't. Like this year, these kids just have no like grit. So I know I'm going to have to add some grit things in there to like give them something to start building up their work ethic. Last year's kids, holy cow, I had to like, I didn't want to turn on the brakes, but I had to harness myself to them to like keep up. And I'm told next year I'll have to do that again. Those are my favorite years when those happen. But this year they said, getting into work is like pulling teeth. So I know I'm going to have to do some things to like, to generate some grit, but I could put that in the gym and say, now look, we got to add this factor in, right? We got to do something that's going to, you know, give these kids some reason to bite into the work and do the job. And that's why I know I'm going to get asked about this in a few weeks. Let's just go with one of the rappers, School AI, Magic School, Brisk. And I know there's going to be there are teachers out there that, are going to just, give me the quick and dirty and I'll just do it. And then there's others that are going to say, no, you know what? I want to get nuanced into the curriculum and do specific things. I want to have more control over the curriculum. And I think, what kind of control you want to have really decides where you go with it. The more I play with gems and I went and I bought myself a ChatGPT script subscription. And I will say that I did gems for fun, but I did something exactly the same, but better in ChatGPT because ChatGPT doesn't say, you're only allowed 10 items in a gem or in a folder, in a in a focus for your project. I can build a project and I can, now it's going to take longer, but I've got one that I've got 15, 20 different items in there because this project is going to be hyper-focused on integrating social studies and language arts standards into something that we can build together. Right. And I want this to be good, but I also want this to be middle level pedagogy. So, that's what I'm gonna do is I got 20 things in there and I need 20 things in there because I'm working with her stuff and my stuff. Right.
Right.
So, gems are nice. Don't get me wrong, but if you're going to go next level, like ChatGPT projects is the way to go.
Well, I'm going to kind of say two things. One is there's a cost component to this. And then also there's a privacy component. For us, gems are student data compliant. The things that we put in there are not added into their corpus. So we have some protections there. And I think that's really important. And I think there's some ways around the 10 limit that you could take a look at as well.
I tried. I tried folders and links. It didn't work.
And then I do appreciate that that you defined wrappers because there are, that wrappers are DFIT, Magic School, School AI, those kinds of things. And even if you can't share a gem per se, you could easily share the prompt and the resources that you're using so someone could create it very easily as well. I know it's an extra step, but it's not much of a step if you have the full prompt, the information, and the resources, you could create it. And you can do this really fast and get some good information. So it happens, it is pretty quick and pretty easy. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I should put a caveat on the ChatGPT. I don't, and this is a bit, that was a big thing at ISTE was ethics and monitoring this stuff. I don't put any student data in ChatGPT. At all.
Right.
All I'm doing is ideating for stuff later. And I use Moodle for my lessons, and ChatGPT is pretty good about doing Moodle stuff. Oh, and this is just a side note. The gift, we played around, I think a year ago, 2 years ago, we played around with ChatGPT generating gift question format stuff. Right. And the gift, and then we had to tweak it using a Troy's favorite editor, BB Edit.
We did.
It was good. But now when I ask it to generate a gift set of questions, I don't have to go into BB Edit. It's just copy paste. Right. It's so nice.
Well, and that was, I think on one hand, we always knew that was hopefully a short-term answer, that as things progress and things, get better, that you don't have to do that, but at least for then you could do it. And it was, something that was useful. So,
I have a question.
It's good to have a question.
Yes. Have you started goulash season at your house?
No. I can safely say we have not because I can also tell you that goulash season never arrives.
All right. Well, I'm double checking because, there are some folks where goulash is a thing, And my Polish aunt would always start off the fall with goulash. Well, Labor Day marks, this is from Midwest versus everybody at Midwestern_OPE. Labor Day weekend marks the unofficial start of summer, or end of summer, sorry, and the official start of soup season. And the first thing they put on there was chili.
which is not soup.
No, that's true. That's, but it reminded me of goulash. So
yeah, which yeah. also is not soup.
It's true. That's so delicious, and it's a good fall thing. So anyway, that's fine. You should not start goulash season at your house. That means there's more for the rest of us over here.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
There you go. Back to John Soash. Want to rock your classroom with tech? Wednesday webinars are packed with practical tips and tricks for using technology to engage your students and enhance learning. Registration open for individuals and districts, and there's a link in the show notes. So John R. Soash is starting to do some regular training, and you can sneak over there and grab some personal PD for yourself.
Is that a Troy's, pay or is that a free one?
Good question. I don't remember because he's got both.
Yeah.
Yep.
Earn up to 30 continuing credits. Register now. Click on that. Always fun to have something that is a, well, you can download a complete list of skills assessed. Okay. I don't know yet.
Troy's underwhelmed.
Like, here you go. Register for $99.
Oh, there you go. All right. So, well, you know, every teacher's got to make a buck.
Oh, sure. I don't hold it against them. I just think people need to know. That's all.
Oh, yes, that's true. That's yeah. National Park Service, one of Troy's favorite social media accounts, Park Service.
I do enjoy the National Park Service.
Yes, and they usually have some pretty good posts. So here's one for you. One day you'll find someone obsessed with you. It'll probably be a squirrel.
Squirrel.
Yep. I had a professor in college who it was a Monday, Wednesday, Friday class, U.S. history. And he'd be teaching. It happened in the late morning, like just before lunch. And he'd be teaching, and the squirrel would come and sit on the window and just like grind at the window edge with, you know, the window and the frame is, and just grind and grind and grind at that and thwack on the window. And he'd go over and he'd wave at it, like saying hello, and it would leave. Like, you know, he'd flick his tail and go. And it happened every time we had class. And it's like, we asked him, we said, what's the deal with you and the squirrel? He goes, I don't know. But if I wave at it, it leaves.
I don't know. Like,
that's weird. And he goes, I know, right? So, yeah. Anyway. All right. So, Susie Dent, word of the day is Tamalu. It's a French name. Maybe it's Tamalu. It's a French name for an older person who no longer greets their friends with, how was your holiday? But with a tamalu, which means where does it hurt? And follows an enthusiastic accounts of aches and pains and doctor's appointments. So there you go. Tamalu.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting older, so, you know, there's that. Maybe I should start doing that.
You should walk into work and do that. There's some main people that probably still, you know, do the whole French thing too, right?
It's interesting because we have places here that you think would be pronounced differently than it is. Like Calais.
Calais.
You would think it would be Calais, but no, it is Calais.
Well, the name Maine actually comes from a place in France. It's the word Maine is La Maine. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You might want to check some of those facts.
That's true. It's very strategic.
There's a write-up about this is a college teacher. But I thought it was interesting because there's a teacher at Georgia State University who teaches American government 1101. And I can't tell you how many times I read it as 101.
I'm kind of looking at what you wrote.
You know?
Yeah.
But he said that, you know, his students kept showing up with fewer facts and more conspiracy theories. Gone were the days when students arrived on campus with dim memories of high school civics.
Uh-huh.
And pointed out that the students were coming with misleading beliefs shaped by TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. So, worked through and he came across a civic online reasoning curriculum. And this is kind of neat because this is self-paced. So this is something that the teacher doesn't have to, like, do. It's something that is can be used in asynchronous learning. There's 6 short modules. It is free. You do have to give them a email address, and they respond to the email address to create an account. But I haven't gotten tons of spam or anything from them so far. So we'll see how it goes. But it's interesting because he claims that he got really, really good results over that. Across 2 semesters and 1 academic year, 3,488 students took a test at the beginning of the course and at the end. And that 80% learned, 80% said that they learned important things from the modules, and their student scores improved by 18%. So, you know, kind of interesting. So I think it's an interesting resource. I think that even if you don't like just apply this to the kids, I think there's things that you could, how can I say this? That you could learn from the course that you could then apply in teaching to your students as well. But there's intro lessons, there's lateral thinking, a little bit of everything, and COR for the science classroom as well. So they have history, civics, they have some classroom posters. There's some neat stuff there. And I explored it a little bit, and I think it's definitely worth free. I think it's more than free, but it's definitely worth free. I think there's some good things. Because let's be honest here, you know, I mean, nothing's ever free because it's going to cost you your time. It's going to cost you, you know, the opportunity cost of not doing something else, all that good stuff, even if it doesn't cost you money. So, but I think this is something that has some really good stuff involved in it. And I think it's something that we really need to help students learn and grow with. So I would definitely check that out.
Did you see AMLE's post this week that they are also publishing a civics curriculum?
Mm-mm.
I don't know. The link in their post doesn't work. It goes 404. So I don't know if it costs anything, and I don't know how long it is, and I don't know much on the details, but they are announcing that in collaboration with the Reagan Library, they are putting together a civics curriculum for middle schoolers.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Then you might want to look at the axis of culture as well.
Ooh, axis. Yeah, you know what? I thought their title for the first article, The Axis Culture Translator, was pretty good. AI against AI was one of the things in the translator this week, and here's what it is. It's AI as research about AI rewires our brains continues to come out. Some high school and college students are deciding that they'll just opt out of using AI altogether. And here's why we can't stop thinking about it. The young adults interviewed for this piece describe what it's like to be total outliers amongst their peers. And they acknowledge that their efforts to retain their critical thinking skills might not earn them any earth reward. A few say that their decision is based on self-respect, a love of learning, and a desire to preserve their own curiosity. And I thought, wow, those are three really great motivators, and also quite esoteric to middle-level education or middle-level students. But that's, I mean, that's, if they've learned that, wow, that's really great, because now AI is just an ancillary tool, not a dependent feature. And yes. I'm very curious about that piece and inspiring that in middle-level kids. So that's something that came out in Access the Culture Translator this week. Now, jumping from that, something else that I discovered this week was, I'm going to go with dia, because it sounds like day, the word for day. And if you look at the icon on the software app, it looks like the rising sun or a rising morning orb. And dia is a web browser. And dia is an AI-assisted web browser. Now, I'm gonna throw this to Troy in just a minute, because he's got the 411 on the drawbacks to an AI browser. I want to let him talk about that. But Dia is in beta. It's an AI web browser from the browser company. They're the makers of Arc. Lets you chat with your tabs. So we were talking about building libraries of material. This is going to sit inside the browser, look at the other tabs that you've pulled up there, and it's going to then use AI to take all those tabs and start having a chat with you about what you're currently seeing, viewing, doing, give you context, learn, plan, shop. They've also are pushing this for students, because they have a student option, and they'll say, you pull up the tabs and then we'll start helping you study all this stuff for whatever test or paper or whatever you need to study for. That's how they're promoting themselves. Dia has launched a beta in June of 2025. If you're already using Arc, you are invited to the beta. There's a video so you can see what it looks like. I put a link to that in the show notes, but I also put in a link to the early beta user invite. So if you want to try it and you're not an Arc user, but you want to try it and you want to invite, or you want to skip the invite and just go straight to download, I shared a link in the show notes for you. Shh, don't tell everybody. Yeah. Now, there are some drawbacks to Dia, and Troy has got a really good explanation of the drawbacks.
So I don't know if I have a really good explanation of the drawbacks, but I have lots of concerns over the privacy of what they're doing. And I always go back to who's doing this and why are they doing this, right? Because this is you always want to understand what's the end game of this. This comes from the browser company who created Arc, which was a new browser, which was a browser, which looked very different.
I like it.
Yeah, and Sean really liked it. I played around with it a little bit and I kind of tried to like it, but it was like, I'm old. I'm ingrained in habits and I didn't give it enough time to reset. So I thought it was okay, but it didn't convert me to using it. So like, why did, you know, they switch from that to this? So this is got a lot of AI built into it. There's a lot of concern about the privacy and what they're doing. And it's going to be interesting to say that they're claiming to be pretty privacy forward, but they were also just purchased by a big company as well.
Yeah, I saw the announcement from Atlassian, and they said that the browser company will be a independent subsidiary of Atlassian.
Right.
So they get all the advantages of working with Atlassian, but they're going to still maintain that small company feel and still, I guess, remain based in New York City or somewhere in New York. I like Arc because I run a 4-monitor setup in my classroom, which is probably excessive. I know that there are folks that have walked in my room, seen my monitor setup, and just turned on and walked out because
I was talking to somebody the other day about, I'm old, so I've been doing this for a long time, and how at one point, you know, we had, you had a laptop you had a desktop, and we had a lot of desktops, and you had a monitor, and then the monitor became larger, right? We went from, you know, 15-inch monitors to 24-inch monitors. And and then like my guys who were heavily into doing a lot with keeping track of different things and that, they went to 2 monitors. It was like, oh, 2 48-inch monitors. And then that became normalized where, you know, pretty much, you know, all of the admin assistants, the secretaries, whatever the nomenclature was at the time, were going to 2 monitors. And then like my guys were going to 3 monitors around. And so it's been interesting to see the progression of going from a small monitor to a larger monitor to multiple monitors. And now for a lot of people, they have 2 monitors. It's almost like standard that people have 2 monitors now. And so like a lot of people now are, so some of the people who do like tons and tons of work are going to 3 monitors. And like I have a 2-monitor setup here personally, but I also have an iPad that's sitting right next to it that functions as a 3rd monitor. Mm-hmm. When I need it to, which is very rare, honestly. I almost always just have it running as an iPad because the things that I would need as a 3rd monitor are iPad apps anyway, and I just have that running as, you know. So I have 3 screens, yeah. But 2 of them aren't connected. So that's been kind of an interesting development to watch as that goes through. But just to kind of return to the DO web browser for a second, one of the concerns is they're focusing on students. Why are they focusing on students? And what kind of information are they going to be collecting and how are they using that information? So just I think people need to be aware of that.
Yeah. If a product is free, you are the product.
So, yeah.
Yep.
And Atlassian, I don't remember how much they bought it for, but they paid for it and there's costs to continue running it. So
yeah.
And AI especially is expensive. There's reason that OpenAI has raised billions of dollars and they're still burning through money like crazy. So it's going to be, at some point, there's going to be a question of how does this pay for itself or who pays for it or how do we do that? So just kind of heads up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, So I started playing with, I have a presentation coming up on the 18th of October to a bunch of science teachers. And so I started putting together some things for my presentation using AI. So maybe I mislabeled this. I called it H5P, personality quiz. but I should be calling it maybe applications of AI section. Maybe it needs a title. I don't know. So here's what I did. I've always thought, you know, the best way I learned, and by the way, chemistry is my worst subject. If we're playing Trivial Pursuit, I'm telling you right now, chemistry is my Achilles heel. That's my kryptonite. So, but one of, I had a chemistry teacher who associated, you know, that he said, we call these the noble gases because they behave a certain way, like with a certain nobility. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I can remember that. Right. And then used other associations with the different sections of the table to kind of help me remember the different table stuff. And I thought, what a great way. And then Bob Harrison, who used to work for you, and showed me.
Hold on. Used to work with me. There's a distinction there, and
okay.
He did not,
I don't want
worked with me. So
I apologize. I assumed okay. The boss position indicated certain levels of hierarchy.
Yeah. Well, there may have been a structure there, but he worked with me.
So. I got you. All right. I was not aware of the unofficial hierarchy, which is more important. All right. So Bob Harrison shared with me a way to use personality quiz in social studies by taking the individual personality traits of founding fathers and using general descriptions. And that way kids could say, well, I'm more like John Adams, or I'm like Thomas Jefferson, or I'm like Thomas Paine. Right. And I said, what if we ascribed personality traits to the different sections of the periodic table of elements? And I went to ChatGPT and I said, here's what I want to do. And of course, ChatGPT is super helpful, friendly, and perky at all times, and said, great, let's do this. And I said, well, give me 16 questions. Mm-hmm. And it gave me 8. And I was like, no, I said 16. And it says, oh, you're right. Here's some more. So it did. And I took those and I put those into the personality quiz activity in H5P. Mm-hmm. And so if you go in, there are 16 questions, I think. 16 questions. And you pick the line or the phrase that is most like you. And when you get down to the end, it will tell you what section of the periodic table fits your personality type. Excuse me. So that's there. That is a free personality quiz for you. I put a link in the show notes. You can go and download that, and works with any place where you can put H5P. Activities.
That's awesome. I'm going to try that out. So,
I also put a link into my capstone project for my ISTU course, the dihydrogen monoxide project. We talked about it here on the show several times. Mm-hmm. And so I made one of those in a it's like that choose your own adventure thing. But instead of making it a choose your own adventure, I made it a choose your own path. And so you can, after the first part, you can choose to go down the instruction side, like the content side. You can choose to go then to one of two different activities. And if you get to the bottom of the first activity, you decide, I don't want to do this activity. You can always go back and choose the other activity, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you get down to the end, it walks you through how to do the two different activities. So it's essentially a glorified choice activity. And then it tells you how to submit your project at the end, and it's all good to go. If you go up to the very top where it says, I'm a student, and it takes you into the student part, but there's a part where it says, I am not a student, and it'll take you into the lesson plan, the objectives, the language objectives, the whole nine yards. So the lesson plan, the activities, the how to do it with the kids, the directions for the kids, everything is in that H5P activity. And I put a link in the show notes, and you can go and download that, and you're welcome to free to use it, modify it. But please, always remember what dihydrogen monoxide is.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, AMLE did a survey of middle school interdisciplinary team practices. And the results of that survey came out. Now it is a, it's behind, you gotta be a member to see it, but I want to talk about some of the things that they discovered, which I thought was really cool. I shared part of this information with my principal because he, I think, is kind of getting, I think he's becoming more and more pro teaming at Strong. And, in their survey, 91% of teams actually discuss individual students, which is cool. That's where you want it to be, right? 84% establish consistent policies, procedures. Matter of fact, my team did that this last week. We decided we're going to have one team consistent phone policy. And now that the kids are using lockers, we're going to be like, nope, those go in the lockers. We don't want them in the room. And if we see them, this is how we're going to deal with it. And it's going to be across the team. 72% are doing team culture building, planning team-wide activities, celebrations, etc. And actually, my principal was celebrating one of the teams that did that, one of the 8th grade teams. 68% are reviewing holistic student academic performance. That's cool. 59% are making phone calls home. That's essential, including the postcards like, you know, good news from school type things. 56% are planning interdisciplinary units, discussing curricular connections. That's higher than I expected, but it's still pretty low. 51% are ensuring every student has an adult advocate. So like they're doing that advisory piece inside teaming. 49% are discussing weekly homework assignments, and 36% are discussing some sort of professional learning, like reading articles together, doing book studies, that sort of thing. So I put a link in the show notes. You do have to be a member to access the survey results. There's a whole lot more there. So much more there, including some evaluation. And this is where we think things are and where we think we could help support things to go to support teaming at the middle level. It's a really great article. I highly recommend it. If you're not a member of AMLE, please do that. And at the same time, also sign up for your local state middle level association. If your state does not have a middle level association, please join the Michigan Association of Middle School Educators. I say that because I'm on the board. Yes, that is a completely self-serving statement.
Absolutely. That's fine. There's some good stuff there. All right. We have some more things over at middleschoolmatters.com, including Simulate AI, which is an educational platform to help students and teachers understand and be aware of what's happening in an AI world. There's also an article from a high schooler about AI demolishing my education. And I think it's an interesting read. It's from The Atlantic, and it's a gift article, so everybody can read that. And then I'm also going to link to a Guardian article where I'll just tell you the title here. Think you actually own all those movies you've been buying digitally? Think again. That's one of the things that, you know, frequently we deal with is teacher, but I can show this, right? Because I bought it. It's like, no. Be aware of what's happening. There have been several of those. If you head over to Middle School Matters, you may notice it looks a little different. apparently, true. When updated the PHP, the theme that I was using said, nuh-uh. So I'm interested in feedback. Let me know what you think of the new site. There's a link there where you can reach out to us, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. And it's something I'll continue to work on. Just is first week of school. It's a busy time. There's a lot of my time being going toward that. So, but we'd love to hear from you. We'd love it if you head over to the podcast catcher of your choice. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. And of course, tell your friends. We've got some good stuff they can benefit from. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guest and not indicative of any employer.